I'm being recorded. I can't comment on that. What do we do? The answer is, this is the point at which I'm going to start sort of skimming, and I'll make these notes available if you want to work through the rigorous details later on. The answer is that we say, well, we were looking to maximize the mean of our winnings, but that was kind of the wrong thing. It would make much more sense to maximize the median of our expected winnings, because then we could say that if my median is bigger than yours, then I probably have more money than you. Well, the way to do that is to observe first that your wealth increases geometrically, right? It's going up exponentially with time, kind of like interest, except it's random interest. So that's the difference between investing in the stock market and going to the track. Actually, there's no difference. Never mind. Because interest is usually kind of random anyway. It fluctuates. But it's pretty unreliable interest. Anyway, the point is, like compound interest, your money is going up exponentially over time. And so we say, well, what if we were to look at the logarithm of our money? Why do I pick that? Because with probability p, your log money increases by an additive factor, log 2x, and with probability 1 minus p, it increases by log of 2, 1 minus x. That's a random walk. That's a probabilistic additive step instead of a multiplicative step. And we know lots of things about random walks. In particular, what we know about random walks is that the central limit theorem says, wave hands, fudge, 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 that over, if you go for long enough, any random walk process will converge to a Gaussian distribution. It will generate a distribution that looks a lot like a Gaussian distribution. And Gaussians are well behaved. They don't have humongous tails like this. So, in particular, for a Gaussian, the median and the mean are the same. Which means that if we look at log money, and we calculate the mean of log money, then we're also calculating the median of log money. But the nice thing is that the median is just the point where half of your weight is below it and half of your weight is above it, and that is invariant under applying functions to your money. The median of x is the median of x squared is the median of e to the x. That's not true of the mean anymore. So the median of your money is the exponential of the median of your log money, which means that if I know the median of the log money, then I know the median of your money, and if I know the mean of the log money, then I know the median of the log money. Okay, so let's study the mean of the log money. The expected value of your log money after one round is just p times the logarithm of the amount of money you have if it's heads, plus 1 minus p times the log of the amount of money you have if it comes up tails. Do some algebra magic. What you get is this prefactor, this additive thing that basically says, well, there's a sort of a base case that you started with D money and you doubled it. But then you're going to lose some money because of the probability that you made the wrong bet. So we add on p log x plus 1 minus p log 1 minus x. And if you've had a course in information theory, you say, huh, there's logarithms. It must have to do with an entropy. Because that's the sort of crap that information theorists are wont to say. Indeed, this thing has a name. It's called the cross-entropy of two probability distributions. And I slipped one over on you right there because I've started calling x a probability distribution for no reason other than it looks like one. It's, you know, x and 1 minus x are positive real numbers that add up to 1. So I can plug it into this formula for the cross-entropy, and that is your loss. Your expected log money is your initial log money, plus a log 2 because I was doubling your money when you won, minus this cross-entropy. And since everything is additive, if you do this n times, it's very simple. After n bets, you've got your initial log money plus n log 2 corresponding to n doublings if you bet correctly, minus a penalty, n times the cross-entropy between the probability distribution and your money distribution, the way you actually used your money. So the whole point is you want to minimize this cross-entropy. Now, you can prove with fairly straightforward calculus that the way to minimize this cross-entropy thing is by setting x equal to p. Allocate your money proportional to the probability. That unconditionally and uniquely minimizes the cross-entropy, and Then you get the cross entropy of P and P, which is in fact the entropy of P. Thank you, Shannon, von Neumann, etc. And the conclusion of this is that we've just solved the problem. The dominant strategy, the one that causes the median of your money to grow faster than any other strategy unconditionally, is to bet your money proportional to the probabilities. Even if you do that, you will still not double your money. Your money will grow at a rate that is doubling minus this entropic penalty, which is kind of cool. Where did the entropy come from? Math. And if you don't bet proportionately, then you will lose money even faster, because the difference between the cross entropy of P and X and the entropy of P itself is called the relative entropy of P with respect to X, and it's the penalty for betting stupidly. So if you go to the track and you're drunk, think to yourself, I can't remember anything he said, but I know that what I'm losing is the relative entropy because I'm stupid. I mean, if I get stupid when I'm drunk. You guys aren't going to record that. Okay. Now, we just had a conversation. It was kind of one way. I regret that. We had a lecture about probability, and we never talked about what it meant. The nice thing is, if you're a hardcore frequentist or a hardcore Bayesian, you can still make sense of everything that I just said. Frequentists and Bayesians can both follow that conversation, and they can both interpret the result in the same way. When playing this game, I should bet my money proportional to the probabilities. The frequentist says, well, we just did a calculation of physics. Like, I know what's going to happen, right? The relative frequencies, blah, blah, blah. Then I can, you know, if I follow this strategy, then in the limit when the relative frequencies are valid, when the frequencies converge to the probabilities, I'm going to win more money than anybody else. The Bayesian says, well, this is just a straightforward consequence of my prior beliefs. If I believe this about the coin, then I also believe that I should bet this way. So the first order lesson to take away from this is that the whole business about beliefs that turns everybody off from Bayesianism at first. There's this quote, by the way, it's due to a bunch of people. Winston Churchill seems to be the most popular person to whom this, well, the person to whom it's the most popular to attribute this. It says, anyone who is not a liberal when they are young has no heart. And anyone who is not a conservative when they are old has no brain. And I would say something like anybody who does not initially think that probability is about frequentism, something, something, and everybody who does not eventually come to believe that it's about Bayesianism, something, something, right? In other words, it's perfectly natural at different stages of exposure to feel different ways about it. It's only the old frequentists that I have a problem with. Young Bayesians are just crazy. They're like Michael J. Fox on that. Who did he play? Alex P. Keating, the young Republican guy. Never mind. God, I'm old. So the point is that either way, what this comes down to is how you're going to act, and you're going to act based on your beliefs. The frequentist says, my beliefs are true, therefore I act this way. The Bayesian says, these are my beliefs, therefore I act this way. As a pygnistic Bayesian, I say, could we please stop talking about interpretations? Could we just place your bets? Ladies and gentlemen, place your bets. Once you have placed your bets, I will see your X, and I will know your P, because your probability is demonstrably equal to the way you bet, unless you are insane, and I will give you the benefit of the doubt and assume you're a rational agent. So in a nutshell, this is the pygnistic perspective. I got in a lot of trouble. All the senior people emailed me saying, oh my God, where did you come up with this stupid word? I said, Wikipedia. But I love it. I didn't know before 3 days ago that I was a pygnist. Not, by the way, pygmatic. Somebody wanted to know why I was talking about pygmatic Bayesianism. Pygmatic, apparently, is a combination, or pygmatism, is a combination of pig-headed and dogmatic. Pygnistic, totally different. It's Latin. So, I believe that probability is an empirically measurable property of an agent in contact with a system. It's how the agent acts, and I can look at that agent and I can see how they act. And what I mean by probability is it's a descriptive thing. It tells, I can tell somebody else, you know, Osama bet at these odds. That's what he did. When I say that's his probability, what I mean is I observed him to bet at those odds. This is not physical probability in the normal sense. But the point of the language that I have phrased it is to bring these together. This may be what DiFinetti had in mind all along, but what I found is that talking about Bayesian probability in terms of beliefs comes across as solipsistic, philosophical, mystical, and otherwise confusing. Let me conclude. Yes?
It seems to me that Pycnicic Bayesianism can only talk about other observers from one observer's perspective. I don't see how you can ever talk about your beliefs about some sort of occurrence unless, or if you say, I don't see how that's different than when you're talking about your beliefs from the other kinds of Bayesianism. It seems that it just adds that you can say things about other observers.
So it requires me to make my bets in front of a mirror. It's a smart-ass response, but no, it's when talking about my beliefs, it's no different, except that I might say, well, in cases where I claim to believe one way but act another, you know, let's suppose that I believe that preparing and being on time is important, and yet every day I'm late and I always procrastinate. To which the Pygna says, you're wrong about your beliefs. You think you believe that, but your actions demonstrate that what you really believe is that procrastination is wonderful. That wouldn't apply to anybody in this room. Okay, so let me conclude in the last 10 minutes or however long you give me by talking about what I think is much more interesting than philosophical questions about probability and what I think is actually extraordinarily relevant to philosophical questions, which is statistical inference. A couple of quotes. Harold Jeffries, author of an influential book on the Bayesian school, on probability, but from a Bayesian perspective, the chief object of this work, this book is entitled Theory of Probability, is to provide a method of drawing inferences from data, observational data, that will be self-consistent and can be used in practice. This is the kind of statement that I can get on board with. Let's talk about the theory of probability with the chief object of drawing practical inferences from observational data. Not because I really give a flying flip about observational data. If I did, I'd be an experimentalist or maybe a theoretical cosmologist. I do quantum information theory. We're not going to have data for 50 years. But I think that the core of physics, at its heart, is data. You have to at least imagine that you have data. Another quote, the fundamental problem of scientific progress and a fundamental one of everyday life is that of learning from experience. This is one of those top 10 ever quotes for me. I could imagine getting this tattooed on my hip bone in a moment of weakness. Life is about learning from experience. And learning from experience means taking data and updating your beliefs and changing your actions. That's statistical inference. So far I've been talking about what is usually called direct probability. You've got a probability that influences an event. If you're a frequentist or a propensityist, it influences the event directly. If you're a Bayesian, it influences how you believe, and therefore it influences directly how you are going to act. So your action is itself an event, which is influenced by the probability. The point is, this is going from probability to stuff. Well, often we want to go the other way. In fact, all the time. We're faced with stuff. We're faced with events happening. I'm faced with, hey, my coffee got cold. What can I infer about the world from that? That Osama should have brought me a hot coffee. Or that I waited too long. Or the second law of thermodynamics. After long enough, everything sucks. Cold coffee. All of these can be drawn by inference, by inductive logic from data. I say they can be. Unfortunately, mathematical logic, deductive logic, gives us no guidance whatsoever on how to connect data to theories. So back in the day, Laplace didn't realize this, and Laplace just waved his hands at it and said, oh, this is just inverse probability as opposed to direct probability, and you just hurl Bayes' rule at it, right? Bing, 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 and you can deduce the probability of, you know, the second law of thermodynamics from the observed data. To which von Mises and Fischer came along and hurled him into the deepest pits of frequentist hell and said, you're an idiot. Either the second law of thermodynamics is true or it's not. You can't assign a probability to the second law of thermodynamics, so you can't use Bayes' rule to update your probability for it. You should figure out whether it's true or not. So these days, we call this statistical inference, not inverse probability. Frequentists think that statistical inference is all about estimating the value of something true based on data. For instance, you might estimate a probability from data. That probability is a physical thing. It exists, and your goal is to get as close as possible. Just like if you measured the mass of the proton, your goal would be to get as close as possible. So the framework, with some key words in it, is there is a population. That's basically what von Mises meant by collective. It's described by certain parameters, like the mean value of the mass of the things in the population. These are real physical quantities, but they're not directly observable. Probabilities, for instance. And you observe samples from that population, and then you compute a statistic, which is an estimate of that underlying parameter. Very nice. Very physics. I mean, this corresponds with what we do in physics. Bayesians believe that the basic problem of statistical inference is either to infer relative probabilities, plausibilities of theories. What theory should I believe? What theory do I believe? Or, this is the one that I like, simply to make good decisions in the future. In other words, it has nothing to do with inferring the actual value of the mass of the proton or the probability of the coin. Rather, it has to do with making the right choices in the future. So you come up with some sort of a task where the best choice is informed by the true value if one exists. And then you simply say, my goal is to do as well as possible. If I knew the true value of whatever it is, and whatever it is had a true value, then I could perform this task perfectly. But I don't, so my goal is to perform it as well as possible. The nice thing is, I've actually factored out the whole problem of estimation. My goal is to make good decisions. So, very briefly, the Bayesian framework is pretty flexible. But at its core, you have a set of theories, and I'll denote theories by theta. Capital theta is the set of theories. And that theory assigns probabilities to possible observations, D for data. So given a theory, I know what the probabilities of the data are. And then, so I can write down the probability of the data given that theory, but I don't know which theory is true. I have some beliefs about nature represented by a prior. Usually, these beliefs are along the lines of, I have no idea what the mass of the proton is. It's an interestingly tricky and current research problem to figure out the best way to mathematically write down that statement. I don't know. You'd think that ignorance would be easy to write down, but it's not. Easy to have, hard to write down. You make some observations. You end up with a particular set of data, call it D prime, for special data. And you update your prior by inserting the data into Bayes' theorem, Bayes' rule. And you get a posterior distribution. The final probability that I have over theories is the probability of the theory given the data that I observed, which is given mathematically by Bayes' rule. My initial probability distribution multiplied by the probability P of D prime given theta, and then just renormalized. The part on the bottom is insignificant. It's just a renormalization factor. And then you use your posterior to make an estimate. The central quantity everybody agrees on is the probability of the data given the theory. This is called the likelihood function. You have observed some data D. What is its probability given one theory? What is its probability given a different theory? This is a function from theories to numbers. It is not a probability distribution over theories. It's a function. It could be that all of your theories assign probability 1 to the data. Then you've got a function that's 1 over all the theories. How could that be a probability distribution? If you remember nothing else about statistical inference, remember that the likelihood function is a function of the theory. Even though it's a distribution over data. It's not a distribution over theories. The Bayesians believe that you should take that likelihood function and you should use Bayes' rule to convert it into a probability distribution over theories. The frequentists believe that that's totally illegitimate. The reason is, frequentists say that the theory is either true or false. You cannot assign a probability to the theory because it's not a random variable. You can only assign probabilities to random variables that are elements of collectives. This is a little bit related to problems like the anthropic principle, by the way. Certain string theorists would like to assign a distribution over values of the fine structure constant on the grounds that there are many different vacua for string theory, and there's a distribution over them. How many universes are there? So this is the core difference between frequentist and Bayesian. To put it concisely, frequentists are looking for the truth. They believe it's out there, and their only goal is to get as close as possible to the truth. Bayesians are seeking the best possible decision. And often, we don't even believe that there is such a thing as truth. And the central point of disagreement is not Bayes' rule, it's priors. It's whether you can assign a prior probability distribution prior to any data over theories. So I'll comment that Bayes' rule itself is not controversial. It's just a consequence of basic facts about probability. What's controversial is where you can use it. Now, I've gone 3 minutes over. There is one final example I would like to present, but I have gone over. So anyone who wants to leave is encouraged at this point, with my blessing. You can come to me later and you can ask me what the last thing I said was, or I will send out these notes and you can read it there. So the class is officially over, but I am going to take about 4 more minutes and tell you something that I think is really cool, those of you who are still here. I want to go back to that gambling problem that I introduced earlier. And the point then was to say, look, a smart frequentist and a smart Bayesian would both assign the same probabilities. They would both bet, if they assign the same probabilities, then no matter what they mean by those probabilities, they would both actually bet in the same way. So these guys, you know, they can go out and you know, have fun together. If they're gambling. Okay, let me change that a little bit. Suppose you need to bet on a series of n coin flips, lots of them. You know, n is big. Maybe, you know, you don't know how long you're going to bet. Before we talked about where you know the probability distribution, but in practice, that's rarely the case. In practice, you don't even know what the probability distribution is. It might be a biased coin. What do you do if you don't know it? Well, you might say, I don't know. I can't do anything. I have to just bet at even odds. But, skipping past some stuff here, you realize that after you've seen the coin flipped a few times, if you're promised that the coins are identical and independent from one another, then you can start learning. You can start doing statistical inference. You can say, well, hey, it's been heads every time so far. Maybe I should bet a little bit more money on heads in the future. This is based on the principle that the future will look sort of like the past. So how do you do this? One obvious idea is, and this is inherently a frequentist idea, it's the maximum likelihood estimator. You simply bet at each time. You say, well, I've seen this many heads and this many tails. I flipped it 10 times. I've seen 10 heads and no tails. Therefore, my probability distribution is 1-0. That's the empirical distribution. If you think about this for maybe 30 seconds, you realize that the first time you flip it, you get, let's say, heads. Therefore, you bet everything on heads. As soon as tails comes up, you lose all your money. This is a bad strategy. It leads to gambler's ruin. So there is, you can think for years, decades, people have, about what to do. And the ingenious solution to this is to say, well, at every step, I'm going to have some probability distribution that I assign. It's going to be conditional on all the flips I've seen so far. That's a statement about any procedure for sequential gambling. And so I am going to call the bet that the probability distribution that I'm making, in other words, the betting strategy I'm using for the n plus 1th coin, I'm going to call it P of flip n plus 1 given flips 1 through n. And I've done, this is supposed to be F1 through Fn, sorry. I have not said that this is a conditional probability calculated from some joint distribution. I'm just writing down symbols. But if you work through it, what you find is that every time the amount that you lose is given by a log, in log money, a log of the probability that you assigned. And those logs add up each time, You work through a calculation, and what you find is that every strategy is exactly equivalent to just starting out by assigning a probability distribution for strings of flips. And your betting, step by step, just implemented that joint betting strategy. And then you say, oh, so every strategy that I could possibly do, every way that I could bet, turns out to be equivalent to just starting out with a big probability distribution over all n flips, and then calculating conditional probabilities as I go along, saying, well, first I bet according to the marginal probability for flip one, and then I bet according to the conditional marginal for one, for two, given one. Which is, huh, the Bayesians were onto something all along. I can describe any strategy, anything that I can do in practice, by writing down a big probability distribution and then betting proportionately. Or rather, if I any bet that I make can be described in that way. And what I think is even cooler, that all that says is every strategy is in some sense a Bayesian one. And then we can make everybody happy by picking between the different Bayesians, right? I've got one Bayesian who believes one thing and another Bayesian who believes another thing. How do I decide between them? And the classical problem that frequentists are smacking Bayesians for is you can't decide. It's subjective. It's like moral relativism, right? It's not. I can actually calculate which of these strategies will work best, not on average, because that's a Bayesian concept, but in the worst case. We all believe that the coin has some probability. And we say, well, let's take each strategy and let's rank it by how well it does in the worst of all possible cases. If the coin is such and such, man, my strategy sucks. And then you pick the one with the best worst case behavior. And this gives you a concrete answer that didn't depend on anything in the Bayesian framework. It is a Bayesian strategy, but you can justify it to a frequentist. And I'm happy to give more details about this. It turns out to be, by the way, the probability that you assign is, take that, the number of times you've observed heads and add a half, and then divide by n plus 1. Very simple. So I will conclude, well, heck, having trouble making that fit on there, by sticking up a quote, a rather extensive one, from Jim Berger about his vision for where statistics is going. And essentially what this quote says is that in the future he thinks the language of statistics will be Bayesian, but the techniques will borrow from both frequentist and Bayesian, and we'll all be happy and get along. Thank you for bearing with my long-winded rambling.